So, welcome Monday morning. Is Brother Rick Bryan, and he's asked that in connection with his remarks that we read Luke chapter 21, verses 25 and 26. Luke 21, beginning verse 25. And there should be signs in the sun and in the moon and in the stars, and upon the earth distress of nations with perplexity, the sea and the waves roaring, men's hearts failing them for fear and for looking after those things which are coming on the earth, for the powers of heaven shall be shaken. We ask your attention to Brother Rick as he speaks on the subject, signs. Brother Rick.
Good morning. Signs at the return of Christ is something that we might be interested in. And the term, the word, occurs 52 times in the King James. Now, they are not all great monumental showings of some great thing, but they can be. Often, a sign is a bit like an earthquake, and sometimes they share the same characteristics. There are rumblings that indicate that the big one is on the way. So if we wanted to make a comparison with the news in the last week, we'd say rather like the British saying they're going to leave the common market. This movement on the part of the British has left everyone a bit unsettled. And we know it's a sign, rather like a road sign saying Owensboro, 10 miles ahead. So if you're paying attention and you see that sign, you realize, well, it's going to take me so many minutes to get to Owensboro. But if you're not paying attention and you're on your phone or you're texting while you're driving, you never see the sign and you go past the exit for Owensboro. A sign can mean, by definition, in Strong's, an ensign, a token, a miracle, or a variation of these. Let's look at some examples. Let's turn to Judges 6, 36 to 40. And Gideon said unto God, if thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said, behold, I will put a fleece of wool in the floor. And if the dew be on the fleece only, and it be dry upon the earth beside, then shall I know that thou wilt save Israel by mine hand, as thou hast said. And it was so, for he rose up early on the morrow, and thrust the fleece together, and wringed the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. And Gideon said unto God, let not thine anger be hot against me, and I will speak but this once. Let me prove, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece. Let it now be dry upon the fleece, and upon all the ground let there be dew. And God did so that night, for it was dry upon the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground. And also in Genesis 1, 14 to 18, and God said, let there be lights in the firmament of the heaven to divide the day from the night, and let them be for signs and for seasons and for days and for years, and let them be for lights in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth. And it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, and the lesser light to rule the night. He made the stars also, and God set them in the firmament of the heaven to give light upon the earth, and to rule over the day and over the night, and to divide the light from the darkness. And God saw that it was good. And also, in Exodus 4, 27 to 31, and the Lord said unto Aaron, go into the wilderness to meet Moses. And he went and met him in the mount of God and kissed him. And Moses told Aaron all the words of the Lord who had sent him and all the signs which he had commanded him. And Moses and Aaron went and gathered together all the elders of the children of Israel. And Aaron spake all the words which the Lord had spoken unto Moses and did the signs in the sight of the people. And the people believed. And when they heard that the Lord had visited the children of Israel and that he had looked upon their affliction, then they bowed their heads and worshipped. And 1 Samuel 10:5. And after that, thou shalt come to the hill of God, where the garrison of the Philistines, and it shall come to pass, when thou art come thither to the city, that thou shalt meet a company of prophets coming down from the high place, with a psaltery and tabret and pipe and harp before them, and they shall prophesy. And the Spirit of the Lord will come upon thee, and thou shalt prophesy with them, and shall be turned into another man. And it shall be, when these signs are come unto thee, that thou shalt do as occasion serve thee. For God is with thee, and thou shalt go down before me to Gilgal, and behold, I will come down unto thee to offer burnt offerings, and to sacrifice sacrifices of peace offerings. 7 days thou shalt tarry, till I come to thee, and show thee what thou shalt do. And Jeremiah 10:2. Thus saith the Lord, learn not the way of the heathen, and be not dismayed at the signs of heaven, for the heathen are dismayed at them. And Matthew 16:3. And in the morning it will be foul weather today, for the sky is red and lowering. Ye hypocrites, ye can discern the face of the sky, but can ye not discern the signs of the times? And one more, Mark 16:20. And they went forth and preached everywhere, the Lord working with them, and confirming the word with signs following. Amen. So these signs were exactly that. They were signs. There is the word of prophecy, which is one thing, and there is a certain type of miracle which represents visual prophecies, and there are miracles that show the power of God. In the Genesis account, the sign is the natural heaven God put together, whereby we know what month, season, day, and hour it is. It also sets up the spiritual order of things. First, the natural, then the spiritual. So that's something that you should consider when you're looking at signs. First the natural, then the spiritual. The Exodus account is the very miracles which Moses and Aaron did in the presence of the Egyptians and the Jews to establish whereby Moses had authority to command the people. So if he walked in there before Pharaoh and he said, I want you to let all the people go, Pharaoh would say, just kill him. The signs the apostles did was to show that they were established by God, as was shown in the account we read. Not just anyone came down with authority, as we have said, to see Pharaoh. The account in 1 Samuel, chapter 10, the sign is a prophecy followed by the fulfillment of the prophecy. The reference of Jeremiah 10 is the fulfillment of things going on, either naturally or spiritually, which are causing great consternation on the part of the unbeliever and ignorant, which is important for us to remember. The unbelieving and ignorant did not know the prophecies, and so the fulfillment of them is fearful to them. In Matthew 16:3, it shows us how a sign works. The sky darkens, gets a little bit red out. What do we expect? We don't expect a little sunshine, and then we hear thunder. And so we can expect in our mind to see some rain showing up pretty soon. So we have a storm, and we know that soon after this, a storm was coming on the Jews some 37 years hence. The observer could see problems building in the Roman Empire. They had a problem with the Jews. And the Romans were going to deal with that by crushing the Jews and displacing their population and burning their temple. And the reference in Mark is probably best refined by reading the New English Version of the same passage. So give me a second to get to Mark 16:20 in the New English Version. And they went out and preached everywhere while the Lord worked with them and confirmed the message by accompanying signs. So you see how the message of God was confirmed through the apostles, and he was adding to what they were saying by allowing them to do miracles. All references give us an idea of how signs work and what they can be. Now, can man be fooled through false signs, magic, imaginations? Well, the answer is yes. Let's look at just a couple so we don't keep you here for an hour. Let's turn to Acts 8, 5 to 11. Then Philip went down to the city of Samaria and preached Christ unto them. And the people with one accord gave heed unto those things which Philip spake, hearing and seeing the miracles which he did. For unclean spirits, crying with loud voice, came out of many that were possessed with them, and many taken with palsies, and that were lame were healed. And there was great joy in that city. But there was a certain man called Simon, which before time in the same city used sorcery, and bewitched the people of Samaria, giving out that himself was some great one, to whom they all gave heed, from the least to the greatest, saying, this man is the great power of God. So we see that this guy was, he was selling religion. He had them all convinced that he had the power of God, when in fact he did not. Man has preconceived ideas of what he thinks should happen, so our prejudices can cloud our idea of what's going to come upon us. Those who speak the words that they think are going to happen are often idolized and reverenced. So we can turn on the TV set and we can see that every morning at 10 o'clock. But that gives them no credence. They are not in reality. Only what God wants is going to occur. Our preconceptions are of no consequence. We must recognize God's will and words. Our wants, in order to be beneficial, our wants must coincide with God's will. What kind of sign are we promised? The signs foretelling or indicating Christ's coming. That's pretty important to us. What does the Bible say, and what can we expect? First, what words relate to the end time, to the diaspora, or to 70 AD? We've got to separate those things out. Sometimes the terminology, the last days, refers to 70 AD. Sometimes the term latter days refers to the time of Christ's return. So if we want to look at last days, we can look at Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. Hebrews 1, 1 and 2. God, who at sundry times and divers manners spake in time past unto the fathers by the prophets, hath in these last days spoken unto us by his Son, whom he hath appointed heir of all things, by whom he also made the world. So he's saying right then, this is those last days. Also, if we look at Ezekiel 38:8, of course, we're all familiar with Ezekiel, where he says, after many days thou shalt be visited. In the latter years thou shalt come into the land that is brought back from the sword and is gathered out of many people against the mountains of Israel, which have been always waste, but is brought forth out of the nations, and they shall dwell safely, all of them. So we think that that now refers to this day instead of 70 AD. Okay. So it would be very interesting to see what applies to us. Let's look real quick at Joel 3, 1 to 16. Joel 3. For behold, in those days and in that time, when I shall bring the captivity of Judah and Jerusalem, I will also gather all nations and will bring them down to the valley of Jehoshaphat, and will plead with them for my people and for my heritage Israel, whom they have scattered among the nations and parted my land. And they have cast lots for my people and have given a boy for an harlot, and sold a girl for wine that they might drink. Yea, and what have they to do with me, O Tyre and Zidon, and all the coast of Palestine? Will ye render me a recompense? And if ye recompense me swiftly and speedily, will I return your recompense upon your own head, because ye have taken my silver and my gold, and have carried into your temples my goodly pleasant things. The children also of Judah and the children of Jerusalem have ye sold unto the Grecians, that ye might remove them far from their border. So we know that these things have happened. Behold, I will raise them out of the place whither ye have sold them, and will return your recompense upon your own head. And I will sell your sons and your daughters into the hand of the children of Judah. And they shall sell them to the Sabaeans, to a people far off, for the Lord hath spoken it. Proclaim ye this among the Gentiles. Prepare for war. Wake up the mighty men. Let all the men of war draw near. Let them come up. Beat your plowshares into swords and your pruning hooks into spears. Let the weak say, I am strong. Assemble yourselves and come, all ye heathen, and gather yourselves together round about. Thither cause the mighty ones to come down, O Lord. Let the heathen be awakened. Let the heathen be wakened and come up to the valley of Jehoshaphat. For there I will sit to judge all the heathen round about. Put ye in the sickle, for the harvest is ripe. Come get you down, for the press is full, the fats overflow, for the wickedness is great, multitudes, multitudes in the valley of decision. For the day of the Lord is near in the valley of decision. The sun and moon shall be darkened, and the stars shall withdraw their shining. The Lord also shall roar out of Zion, and utter his voice from Jerusalem, and the heavens and the earth shall shake. But the Lord will be the hope of his people and the strength of the children of Israel. We recognize Joel as a true prophet. Does his words apply to Christ's coming? This relates to the end of Gentile time and what is about to occur. Perplexity. We read that at the beginning. Perplexity. It means inability to deal with something. The waves roaring. We see the sign coming, and the world will not understand them. With signs in the sun, moon, and stars, the nations will be in anguish over the signs in the sea, the tossing, strange tides, surging waves. And those are from different interpretations. The thinking man has traditionally thought, Christadelphian-wise, is that the sea is the nation, the people. The upheaval of the population is a sign. The sun, moon, and stars have traditionally meant dissolution of the political powers upon the earth. Is all that powers? A good historical example of these powers, when man wants to control things, is when Spain and France wanted to preclude Great Britain from gaining ascendancy over them. So they went to war. They did not gain ascendancy over Great Britain, and so Great Britain became the master of the seas. Another example that we would be familiar with is on September the 9th, 1929, the economic engine of the world ran off its track and plunged the world into the Great Depression, changing the political landscape. And because everybody was so desperate, it helped pave the way for the Second World War. This depression was also a sign. These type of upheavals are truly cause for consternation on the part of the world's leadership and the population, but not for us. Remember, the Bible is written from the vantage point of Israel. The powers who will be affected and the people concerned with them will be those who are involved for or against Israel. What does all this mean for us? Signs of Christ's return will be confusing and scary for mankind in general. Man in general will question what is going on and why it is seemingly out of their control. The politicians think that they can manipulate what's going on, but it will be out of their control. They cannot manipulate things against the angelic host. The angelic host now, they can truly manipulate the outcomes. Neither politician nor man in general has the information to understand what's going on. Now, the information is out there, and we've got it, but they don't have it, and they haven't read it. Nothing our politicians try will bring, will bring balance. No international group, treaty, or other man-made contrivance will hold back the coming disruption of political order. Like an unanticipated and sudden flood that once caught man by surprise, so will the coming of the Son of God be. But Noah was not surprised, but his neighbors were. Government and their support mechanisms will melt away, clueless, like the darkened moon and stars, leaving the uneducated masses roaring in our midst. These are signs, tokens, and promises indicating the nearness of Jesus' return. See them. Thank you.
Brother Rick, we are a couple minutes early, but we'll dismiss to our classes.